Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Any member fail to vote? Madam Clerk?
25 members present.
We have quorum. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, may the record reflect that Representatives Morgan, Ogun, and Moses have been previously excused from the Hall of the House today.
All those folks are going to be shown as excused. Leading the invocation today is Pastor Greg Lindsay of the Northern Lights United Church. Would members please rise for the invocation?
In respect of one another's spiritual lives, I am inviting you to spend a few moments in prayer and reflection. Let us pray. God of all people, help us to be honest today. Preserve us from false talk, cheap words, and insincere conversation as we seek to serve the people. Instructed by those who have gone before us, help us honestly say what is on our hearts and minds. Help us to speak the truth in love, but temper our honesty with compassion. Give us the courage to lay aside our anger or despair, and instead find hope and healing in the work that you give us to do. Gracious God, guide the work of our hands. May we always give the most attention to the people who are most in need. May we never serve with arrogance or in our honesty speak words that hurt. May we always strive to bring greatness to the state. Amen.
Representative Jewell, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that that prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 89th, 90th, and 91st legislative days.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the journal has been certified. Do we have guests this morning for introduction? Representative Jewell, and then Fate.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. In the Perachevich Gallery, I have four students who are down here, part of the close-up. Two from Point Lay, Jane Tukruk and Nicholas Young. If you'd please stand back there. And then also Flora Agiak and Sylvia Simmons from Kaktovik, I believe. So if you'd, with the body, please help me welcome them to Juneau.
Representative Fate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, from the Middle School of North Pole in the close-up program, we have some of our future leaders from the interior of Alaska, and it's nice to have some people from my district, my constituents, who are those future leaders. We have with us, and if they will stand as I read your name, Heather Brewer, Katie College, Justin Miller, Jessica Wiltsey, and their teacher, Linda File. Please welcome them to the legislature.
Madam Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sitting also in the Perachevich Gallery is Katie Childs with the junior close-up program. She's an eighth grader at North Pole Middle School and is here with the junior Alaska close-up program, and she's on the honor roll and is a member of the National Junior Honor Society, and she's very interested in learning about how our state government works. So would you help me welcome her here today?
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also under introduction of guests, I have a constituent friend from Homer, Karen Berger in the Perachevich Gallery, who is down here attending the Folk Festival. But she's the owner of the Homer Brewing Company in Homer, Alaska. So please help me welcome her, Mr. Speaker.
Any other guests? Brief at ease. Any other guests for introduction? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I guess somebody thought these two folks were belonged to my good friend from the island district there, but this is one of the few island communities that I have. I have the Valley of Juneau, and in the other gallery, I have Taryn Foster and Betty Bueller. a teacher, and an eighth grade member from Cube Cove, if they would stand and let us welcome them.
Any other guests? Returning then to the calendar, we have messages from the governor.
A message dated April 12th stating the governor is transmitting the following to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Senate CS for CS for House Joint Resolution 44, Resources Amended Senate Reengrossed, Legislative Resolve Number 50. There are no further messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
Message dated April 12th. Stating the Senate has passed the following, they're transmitted for consideration. CS for Senate Bill 263, Rules, by the Senate Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Subsequent Acquisition of Title II or an Interest in Real Property by a Person to Whom the Property has Purportedly Been Granted in Fee or Fee Simple and Providing for an Effective Date.
Will be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Senate Bill 358 by the Senate Rules Committee, entitled An Act Naming State Ferries.
Will be referred to the Transportation Committee.
There are no further messages from the other body.
Do we have communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 23, Legislative Committee, Split House, Hess, attaches a fiscal note recommending do pass Jules Cisna, Stevens Wilson, do not pass Coghill, Coring, and Dyson. The report was signed by Dyson Chair. House Concurrent Resolution 23 has no further referral. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 464, School District Correspondence Study, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 464, Hess, with the new title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Coghill, Coring, Wilson, Stevens, and Dyson. The report was signed by Dyson Chair. House Bill 464 has a further referral to the Education Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 471, AIDEA Programs, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 471, Labor and Commerce, with the new title, recommending do pass Meyer, Crawford, Halcrow, Cott. No recommendation, Hayes. The report was signed by Halcrow Vice Chair. House Bill 471 has no further referral. There are no further reports of standing committees, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports.
Representative Dyson. Brief it is. Would the House please come back to order? Do we have any other special committee reports?
There are no special committee reports.
Introductions of resolutions or citations?
Citation in memoriam, Charles Thomas Tom Mattson, Sr., by Representatives Moses Hudson, Stevens, Cott, Senators Osterman, and Halford. There are no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Do we have bills for introduction?
There are no bills for introduction.
That brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 344 by the House Rules Committee, entitled An Act Increasing Fees for Driver's Licenses, Instruction Permits, and Identification Cards, and Providing for an Effective Date. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 344, State Affairs, with the same title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending due pass Wilson, Stevens, Fate, Hayes, no recommendation, Crawford, and Coghill. The report was signed by Coghill Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 344, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending do pass Bundy, Whitaker, Harris, Davies, Lancaster, Mulder, and Williams. The report was signed by Mulder and Williams co-chairs. There's one committee substitute.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 344 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the State Affairs Committee substitute before us. Do we have amendments?
I have no amendments.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 344 State Affairs be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 344 State Affairs, entitled An Act Increasing Fees for Driver's Licenses, Instruction Permits, and Identification Cards, and Providing for an Effective Date.
Discussion. Representative Codd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill does two things. First of all, it increases the fees on driver's licenses and ID cards by $5, and the second thing it does is it increases learner's permits by $10. Considering the number of licenses that's been issued on an annual basis, this should raise between $750,000 to $900,000 per year. Mr. Speaker, last time we raised fees on driver's licenses was back in 1993. We're in the bottom third. So we're talking about raising driver licenses a dollar a year. As you know, they're issued on a five-year basis. Mr. Speaker, this is important because it will allow the Department of Motor Vehicles, Division of Motor Vehicles, the opportunity to purchase the system that goes hand in glove with the digital cameras that we're hoping we're going to be able to implement by certainly the end of the year or early next year. In the Capitol, we've already provided the necessary monies for the equipment, and now we're trying to develop in the whole system into one nice, neat package, which will allow us to go digital. Mr. Speaker, right now there's only three states that are well behind the power curve or living in the dinosaur age: Alaska, Rhode Island, and Oklahoma. Rhode Island and Oklahoma have already gone out for an RFP to go to this digital system, so that leaves us alone that perhaps would be falling behind. Mr. Speaker, as you might know, the driver's licenses are considered breeder documents. That is, you go to a bank, they ask you for your driver's license to open up a checking account. And there's a passport sometimes requires that. So, Mr. Speaker, a driver's license is important. I think it's important for the state of Alaska to preserve the integrity of that license. And that's what these digital licenses lend their credibility to. Mr. Speaker, for instance, if you were traveling in Seattle on a flight from Seattle to New York, on your way down there, you misplace your driver's license. You know, we're always taking it out of our pocket. I always carry mine in my pocket these days, Mr. Speaker. I don't even put it in my wallet. I got it right with me. That gives me a backup. My wallet's got my military identification card. But I've already been told of a couple of occasions. See, my friend here does the same thing, keeps it in his front pocket. But I've been told of a couple of occasions where someone had checked their ID at the gate, and slipped it into their boarding pass, and for some reason it had fallen out walking down to the plane. They got to Seattle. They're trying to make a connection. Guess what? They have no other identification. They can't make a connection. Mr. Speaker, under the current guise, they've got some real problems because you can call back up to the state of Alaska and get an ID card issued, but you don't have a photograph on it. There's no way that we have a photo copy of the individual within the Department of Division of Motor Vehicles at the present time. This digital system will allow for that. It is an extremely secure method. For those that say, well, I don't want all this information on the front of a card, well, right now, all the information that's contained on the front of your driver's license is authorized by statute. But let me give you one other instance why this digital system, I think, is important. For instance, if I were pulled over by a state trooper for whatever reason, or the municipality of Anchorage Police Department, and they're asking me for my driver's license. I give it to them. They get on the horn, the radio dispatcher, and said, "Oh, well, wait, I just pulled over Pete Cott," and his Social Security number that goes to them. Those people that are out there with these scanners get that information. Now, these new digital licenses have a strip on the back. It's scanned, and it goes right. There's no information, no exchange of information over the airwaves. So it is a little more secure. Mr. Speaker, as I was alluding to earlier, we are one of three states that do not have the digital system. It's my understanding back in October of last year, Polaroid filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and shortly thereafter, they sold their identification business to Digimarc. Now, the Vice President of Digimarc Sales has already indicated that the other two states are going to go to the digital system, and it's highly unlikely that they're going to be able to provide the Polaroid paper to Alaska. The market's just not big enough. So we're going to be in a pretty sad situation where we're trying to issue licenses and we don't have the paper to issue them on. So I think it's imperative that we pass the legislation. We already have the capital for the equipment, and this legislation, as it's passed, and the fees that are generated from it will allow us to tie the whole system together into a network and allow us to be, I think, with the rest of the United States in securing the information on a driver's license and those ID cards. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I would ask the members to support.
Representative Cott, any further discussion? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question. Approximately how long will it take to make the transition into the new card form here in Alaska?
Representative Hudson. Representative Cott.
Mr. Speaker, it's probably going to take about 6 to 8 months. I think once they have the revenue starting to come in, that will tie the system together. It's my understanding they haven't gone out for the equipment yet, but the equipment is readily available, and they're not these printers that do the printing are not those kinds of printers that you and I can go out and purchase. They're pretty much on a commercial basis, pretty high tech and pretty expensive. But once they've got the approval here, they're going to go ahead and procure the equipment and then get the software that hooks everything together.
Representative Cott. Representative James.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to make a point on the fiscal note on this piece of legislation. It's indicated $500,000 in contractual to implement this issue with $900,000 of new revenue. And that's only in the first year. And then after that, there's $900,000 of new revenue every year for a long time. So if you're in the idea that you might want to make a little dent in our fiscal process here, I think maybe this is a good bill to vote for.
Representative James, Representative Bundy, and then Rocco.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Asking for a little latitude on another issue that came before this body, there was some concern that people in rural Alaska didn't have access to driver's license related to using certain motorized equipment. And it's now very apparent that you don't even get on a bush carrier without some ID, and this does address an identification card as well as driver's license. What provisions have been made so that rural Alaska can have access to these, either driver's license or ID card?
Representative Cott?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was going to wait and see if there are any additional questions before I answer this one, but there's no additional provisions being made at this point. You're going to have to go through the same litany to get a driver's license under this digital system as you would today. However, it ought to be brought out that in reissuing those licenses, if you were out in rural Alaska or Bush Alaska and you lost that permit or you lost your identification card, then it would require nothing more than picking up the phone and getting that digitally made and sent out to you. So it does help in the long run. The short term, I don't believe there's any additional provisions made for Bush Alaska.
Representative Cargill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When we heard this in State Affairs, one of my concerns is that we're really creating an identification card rather than producing a driver's license. And we're certainly the need to upgrade technologically, I think, is important. And one of the struggles I have, though, in creating a state driver's license that will become really kind of de facto national identification card, it troubles me, and I'm not too sure exactly how to change all that. So we'll be watching other legislation to help make whatever sidebars we can on this. But it is now, through this change, probably going to become more of an ID card than a driver's license.
Representative Cargill. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body. Michelle, committee substitute for HB 344, State Affairs. Pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
35 yeas, 2 nays.
And so committee substitute for HB 344 State Affairs has passed the House. Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the bill be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item?
House Bill 474 by Representatives Green and McGuire, entitled An Act Relating to Public Rights of Way and Easements for Surface Transportation Affected in the Anchorage Coastal Wildlife Refuge. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 474, CNRA, with the same title attached to zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Scalzi and Meyer. No recommendation, Murkowski, Guest, Curtula, and Morgan. The report was signed by Meyer and Morgan, co-chairs. The Resources Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 474, CNRA, with the same title, recommending do pass Green, McGuire, and Scalzi. No recommendation, Stevens, Chenault, and Masick. Amend, Curtula. The report was signed by Masick and Scalzi, co-chairs. There's one committee substitute.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 474 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute before us. Do we have amendments?
There are no amendments.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 474, CNRA, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. This bill will appear on tomorrow's calendar in third reading. Would the clerk and would members please retain their copy of the bill so it does not have to be reproduced? Would the clerk please read the next item?
There are citations on today's calendar.
Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. That brings us to unfinished business. We have items of unfinished business. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, if I can keep my feet. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up reconsideration of my vote on SB 242 at this time and move that we go back to second reading for a specific amendment, that being amendment number one on the member's desk. One motion at a time. The first part.
Without objection, we are under reconsideration of 242, and a motion has been made to move back to second. Without objection, we are in second reading for the consideration of amendment number one on the member's desk. Representative Bundy.
I move amendment number one.
There is objection. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, continuing with your indulgence on a little latitude, I'd like to speak to amendment number one. As we discussed the underlying bill, previously, the representative from Eagle River had some interesting, if maybe a little satirical, observations about other states, provinces, countries know their people best and should be allowed to limit their behavior as much as they want. Mr. Speaker, this amendment, I think, addresses that idea, but as is not infrequently the case, that representative and myself can take the same information and come to different conclusions. Mr. Speaker, it is true that other states know their people best, but Alaska doesn't know those people, and I don't think other states should be giving carte blanche to decide who in Alaska is allowed to have a concealed carry permit. Mr. Speaker, I think this amendment will correct go some ways toward correcting that problem. I frankly don't want people in a state where they perhaps don't know the difference between a hanging chad and a dangling participle deciding who's going to carry concealed in Alaska. And so this says if you come to Alaska and you spend 90 days here, you're probably going to be a resident. And so Alaska laws should apply to you like other Alaska residents. And so then you get an Alaska concealed carry permit. It also says, Mr. Speaker, that if you're not qualified for a concealed carry permit in Alaska, you can't run off to another state that has lower requirements, less of a standard, get a permit, and then come back to Alaska claiming this reciprocity because you picked up your permit in another state. Alaska residents ought to live by Alaskan standards, and I think this amendment speaks to that.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Representative Croft.
Mr. Speaker, may I move an amendment to amendment number one? It simply deletes lines 4 and 5 and the numeral 2 on line 6. So of the two parts, it keeps that second section and not that the first. I think it's understandable to the members. I didn't have time to write it up. Deletes lines 4 and 5 and the parentheses 2 parentheses on line 6.
Object.
There is objection. The amendment for the body is the deletion of lines 4 and 5 with the exception of the number 1 and to include the number 2 on line 6. Is that essentially the amendment? House, please come back to order. Motion before the body is an amendment to the amendment that would eliminate lines 4 and 5 and the number 2. Representative?
Can I speak to the amendment?
There has been objection, and now we're under discussion. Representative James.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to speak in support of the amendment to the amendment, and the rationale for this really is that it is, first of all, we're having a problem now with the 120 days in getting a reciprocal agreement with another state, and it's really not enforceable either, because what it would do is require people to then report when they get here to be able to see whether or not they've been here for 90 days. So I would support the amendment to the amendment.
Representative Croft.
The Majority Leader did an excellent introduction to my amendment to the amendment. I said before in talking about this bill that it was nice to have you come down, nice to debate you again. It's been 4 years since we've had the pleasure of doing that. It's actually kind of nice having you stuck up there, Mr. Speaker. Now that I think about it, where you can't. So it would have been fun to debate. It's even more fun debating when you're gagged, if you will. What the amendment to the amendment does, as explained by the Majority Leader, gets rid of that 90-day provision. Right now we have a 120-day provision in our law, and that's causing us some problems with reciprocity with at least one state. More importantly, these permits expire. So rather than going through the administrative burden of a 90 or 120-day, where I guess somebody would have to notify the Department of Public Safety when they came in, or how you would know when they came in, it would simply say, as it would in current law, when your permit expires, you're now an Alaska resident. At that time, you would go back through ours. I do like the provision, however, that you've put in 2, which would now be the only thing left in amendment number 1, which says we're gonna allow this reciprocity generally, but not as a way of subterfuge. That is, not as a way to get around it. So come on in if you've qualified under any other state, but not if you've already failed ours. Or it's been revoked or suspended. So that's the reason left that second part. But I think the first part, the 90 days, is more restrictive than we have and largely unnecessary given that the permits do expire. Don't you agree, Mr. Speaker?
Representative Croft. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, interesting how we can look at the same facts and come to different conclusions. Mr. Speaker, if we were going to only have laws in the books that are completely enforceable, we'd have much smaller law books. Mr. Speaker, part of our laws establish what we want and what people brag about concealed carry people doing as being honest, law-abiding citizens. And so I think it's perfectly acceptable that we would tell people we're going to move to this state. And certainly, if you're here 90 days, you're no longer what we mostly call a tourist. But I see some inconsistency here. In the other deadly weapon that we ask people to be licensed for, that is an automobile, if you're here 90 days, we ask you to get an Alaskan driver's license. And now, if you're here 90 days, we're going to say, well, concealed carry permit is a different category. And driver's license expire. The reasoning is similar. But why would we hold people who drive vehicles to a higher standard than we would those who wish to have a concealed carry permit? If this passes, I assume that there will be an immediately legislation introduced to remove the driver's license requirement from our legislation.
Representative Bundy. Representative Mulder.
Speaker, even though I tend to support the gun lobby, I'm going to oppose this amendment because I would tend to agree. I mean, if we're going to be consistent, let's be consistent in our application of laws. If folks want to come up here and live in Alaska, and that's basically what we're saying, if people are up here for more than 90 days, they're not just up touring, they're up here living. If you want to come up and move to Alaska, live by our laws, get our concealed carry permits. Otherwise, don't expect that we're going to reciprocate and honor your permits from below. So for that reason, Mr. Speaker, for the consistency argument, I'm going to oppose the amendment.
Representative Mulder. Representative Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I speak to the comments of the previous two speakers. The difference between an automobile and a firearm is automobiles kill tens of thousands of people in our nation, and firearms have, in the hands of concealed weapon carry permit holders, have been done very little damage, far less than any of us expected. Secondly, the right to protect yourself and to bear an arm is protecting our Constitution, and I suspect that I don't understand the logic trail that says that the right to drive an automobile is. That's certainly a difference there. I don't accept the premise that, Mr. Speaker, that somebody that's here for 90 days is a resident. We have quite a few some folks who come up for special work assignments and also for to see this beautiful country. Then back to the, let's see, there was one more brilliant thing I wanted to say. I'm losing it here. Yeah, the part of my enthusiasm for people being able to protect themselves has to do with my great distaste for domestic violence. And we have a great, we have a very consistent track record here that restraining orders aren't very useful. And I'm not wanting us to have a circumstance where the perpetrator who is after someone can know that they will be unprotected, you know, if they travel to our state, or that there'll be a window of time where they'll be unprotected. So that's why I'm going to support the amendment. And I think I appreciate the maker of the amendment and his thoughtfulness on it, and I would encourage support for the amendment. And I really appreciate the bigger amendment.
Representative Dyson. Any further discussion? Representative Mazzick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this amendment. I believe that Alaska has a very good program in obtaining a concealed carry permit. There's a lot of checks and balance that has to be gone through the process before you can get the permit. And with the bill that we have before us, it would farther protect and help law-abiding citizens that have concealed carry permits. And we get a lot of people that come to the state, Mr. Speaker, and a lot of them don't stay a long time, but some of them end up staying quite some time, and they do need to have, if they're coming up to hunt or to do something, I think we need to stay on track and not get sidetracked by amendments like this. I think the bill itself is went through the process in both bodies, and it's been deliberated, and it survived both committees, and I don't think this amendment is necessary, Mr. Speaker, and I urge members not to support the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Dyson.
A brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Would the House please come back to order? The motion before the body is the amendment to amendment number one, removing lines four, 5 and the number 2 of line 6. Is there any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of amendment, the amendment to amendment number 1. Members may proceed to vote. Here we go again. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
19 yeas, 17 nays.
So amendment, the amendment to amendment number 1 has passed the House. That brings back in front of us the amendment as amended. Is there any further discussion? Representative Bundy.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to add to my comments on the amendment that I absolutely support responsible Alaskans' right to carry a concealed weapon. Absolutely support responsible Alaskans' right to carry a concealed weapon. Mr. Speaker, Alaska is unique. It's a special and it's a different place. And I think we indeed do know our people best. And so the right for can carry a concealed weapon, the requirements, the limitations, the responsibilities, indeed ought to be decided for Alaskans by Alaskans, and that's why I bring forth the amendment.
Representative Bundy. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And with your leave, I'd like to read an email that I received, at least portions of an email I received that are appropriate to this section.
Without objection.
My name is Bob Glenn. I'm a detective in the Anchorage Police Department Homicide Section. On March 31st, 2000, CCW permit holder CB fired rounds from his pistol after being refused service. He was too drunk. I was the first police officer on the scene. I caught up to him as he was walking from the scene. He then pulled his legally concealed pistol on Detective Bridges and I. I then shot him, wounding him in the thigh. After many delays, we went to trial, and he was convicted of several weapons violations as well as assault third against me. He was sentenced this year nearly 2 years after the incident and still had a valid CCW permit at the time. He had retained his permit after sentencing pending an appeal. Why does a person under indictment and later while convicted for an assault with a handgun not have his permit suspended? Mr. B had a, that's not me, that's the defendant. Mr. B had a misdemeanor history of drunk driving, vandalism and disorderly conduct, original charge, assault on a police officer, and a history of admission to API and substance abuse problems. How is the public served when the legislature requires the issuance of CCW permits to criminals with mental problems?
Representative Berkowitz. Any other discussion? Representative James.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a brief comment on this letter or this email that was sent around today and was just partly read by the minority leader. And certainly that is a valid situation, but it sounds to me like it's an administrative situation more than it is the concealed carry bill and does not affect it whatsoever with what we're doing in this particular piece of legislation we're talking about. It's interesting, and I will check it out.
Representative James. Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to comment myself on the letter. Certainly, that's an unfortunate situation. I think it might have more bearing on this debate if the concealed carry permit holder had a permit from another state. Doesn't sound like he or she did, so it sounds like it's an administrative problem within the state and perhaps something we need to address at a later date regarding mental states. But I don't think it relates to this bill.
Representative McGuire. Any other discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of amendment number 1 as amended. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
34 yeas, 3 nays.
So amendment number 1 has passed the House. Briefities. Would the House please come back to order? Representative Foster.
Back to introductions.
Without objection.
I've got Liz Walters sitting behind me. She used to work for me for a number of years. She's part of the famous Kitka clan from Sitka and Juneau. Her husband, George Walters, recently retired from BIA from Teller in Nome, Purple Heart winner in Korea. And Liz even worked for my predecessor, Henry Springer, so she's been here a long time. Please help me welcome her here to the floor.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. With the body's indulgence, can we move back to second for the purpose of a specific amendment?
Without objection, we're in second for the purposes of a specific amendment. Representative Berkowitz.
I move amendment number two.
There is objection. Representative Berkowitz.
Mr. Speaker, what amendment two does is, in essence, a little bit broader than what subsection one did in the amendment that you offered. And what it states is that if someone is an Alaskan resident or intends to become an Alaskan resident, then they need to have an Alaskan CCW permit. That you can't look at, you can't carry an old permit from another state up here and take a permanent fund, get a resident hunting or fishing license, vote in local elections, and still keep an outside permit. If you're here, you got to play by our laws. In essence, this is sort of a state's rights position, is that when you're an Alaskan citizen, you follow Alaskan laws. It also would prevent the ability of someone who might not qualify under Alaska's rules to go outside, pick up a permit outside, and then use that outside permit here. And I would encourage the body to think about this and vote for it.
Representative Berkowitz. Representative James.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly, I don't see any real problem with this, but I just have to comment on the suspicion that everyone has, that someone is not going to get to qualify in this state for a permit, and they're going to run outside and get another one and then come back into the state, I think is a conjecture that is almost hilarious. But in any event, I think that the intention of us all the way along is for Alaskan residents to have an Alaska concealed handgun permit, to be able to permit it. The whole issue, and without necessarily speaking just on this amendment, but the whole issue of whether or not Alaska can carry in other states, if we allow other states to carry here without an awful lot of change in the rules for that period of time, is the goal here. And I don't believe that this does interfere with the goal. And so I would withdraw my objection unless someone else has one.
Is the objection to amendment number two maintained? Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd maintain an objection to amendment number two. We're talking about the Second Amendment, aren't we? It's a little unclear to me, and I was struggling at the IDs to figure out how amendment two fits in. It says 1865-748 is amended to read. We, in amendment one, added other language. I guess it means it adds on another phrase. But really, those are probably technical and can be fit in by Ledge Legal at a later date. I think it's somewhat clumsy, but I think I understand what it's going towards. It would, in effect, though, we were arguing between 120 days and 90 days. If I understand it correctly, it becomes 0 days. I mean, the moment you step over the border, nice place, I guess I intend to remain, you've got to change exactly then, or you're violating the law. And certainly a 120 or a 90 is preferable to that, and for me, no such limit is preferable. When your concealed carry permit expires, even if you've been a resident for that year it took for it to expire, then go out and get your Alaska one. Where there were manageable but some technical or supervision problems with a 90 or 120 day, with an instantaneous, it does get very problematic. Come in on a trip, decide I'm going to stay, and that very instant I either have to surrender my right to carry concealed or be doing it in violation of the law, because admittedly I was a resident yesterday. I decided that I had an intent to remain. So I think the bill stands better without amendment number two, and would urge the members to vote against it.
Any further discussion? Representative Roper.
I also rise in opposition to the amendment, Mr. Speaker. I think it is unclear as to what constitutes the intent to become a resident. I think we've had significant discussions in the past and in the courts about who
intends to become a resident for purposes of applying for a permanent fund dividend. And I believe that the previous speaker about the day zero and the defaulting to that is accurate. And but it isn't exactly clear. This would be an evidentiary thing that could be disputed before the courts, and trying to determine when you intended to become a resident, you would have to accept the claim of the permittee. As a matter of fact, I think the defect with this amendment is that if there was thought to be a violation of carrying the concealed weapon, the defense would be that I intend to become a resident. Therefore, it's valid. I don't think that's good law, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I propose an amendment to the amendment deleting the lines "or does not intend to become."
The motion is to amend the amendment by deleting the last phrase "or does not intend to become a resident of the state of Alaska." Is there objection to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment to the amendment is passed. That brings us back to the amendment as amended. Representative Berkowitz.
I was just curious if any objection still remains.
Representative McGuire.
Point of technical clarification, if you delete "or does not intend to become a resident," you sort of have a dangling word there. You have "provided that the person is not." I don't think the maker of the...
Brief it is, Mr. Chairman.
Brief it is.
With the permission of the body, the amendment to the amendment was to delete the phrase "or does not intend to become" and then continue on, leaving a resident of the state of Alaska. Is there objection then to the amendment to the amendment? Representative Rookwood.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I do want to maintain my objection because it doesn't, if this is to begin the particular section of law, I'm not sure it's very clear there as to its insertion. Apparently, the maker of the amendment wishes this sentence to be the first sentence of that particular section, 1865-748. And I'm not real comfortable right now voting on this. If somebody thinks that the reviser or the or alleged legal is going to fix it, I'm not sure exactly what the format here is, and I object to the format.
Representative Rookberg, I was asking for another consideration of the vote on the amendment to the amendment, since I had improperly stated it before the House. I thought that we would rescind that and revote on the amendment to the amendment. So at this point, is there objection to the amendment to the amendment as I've rephrased it? Seeing none, now we're back to the amendment as amended. Representative Croft.
Frankly, Mr. Speaker, I'm getting more and more confused, and usually can keep some of this straight in my mind, but I'm not sure that the amendment to the amendment that we just passed, while unobjectionable, really accomplished curing the objections we were talking about. Residency is a somewhat tricky concept. It's used a lot of different ways. I teach the bar review course in the summers, and for purposes of divorce, there are about three different standards depending on what you want to do, how long you have to remain. Some of them as easy as "I'm here and I intend to remain, therefore I am a resident for purposes of various statutes." So it kind of comes down to the same thing. When I, for whatever purpose you're talking about, and residency is used different ways in statute, when you're present and intend to remain, you're a resident. And therefore, despite taking out the language "intend to remain," the question becomes, when are you a resident? And if that's it, step forward, looks good, I want to stay, and you call your mother and say you're staying, you have become a resident, and therefore cannot carry concealed until you go through all the other processes. So this still has the problem, I believe, though I acknowledge I'm a little confused by the various changes that this has gone through, I believe that it still requires not a 90 or 120 day, but a rather an instantaneous one at that point when you become a resident. And though there are various standards, some of the residency requirements are simply here and want to stay.
Ms. Incroft, any further discussion? Mr. Minority Leader, wrap
up. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, my brother's a meteorologist, and he would have forecast a lot of fog on this one, and I think he'd have been right. That whole residency requirement is nothing but fog. When you're a resident, we all know what residency is. We all have to live in our districts for at least a year. We know what the residency requirements are. We know that there's residency requirements that strictly apply for getting a residence hunting or fishing license. We know what the residency requirements are for someone to be allowed to vote. I think it's pretty clear in the context what residency means. And if people want to hide in the fog and vote against the amendment, that's one thing. But if you think that Alaskans who carry concealed weapons should be, who carry permits, should have Alaskan permits, then you should vote for this amendment.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm still one of those left in the fog. And if it's if it's so clear what residency means under this amendment, then perhaps the maker of the amendment could make it very clear, because I'm still unclear.
Representative Whitaker. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of Amendment Number 2, as amended. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
9 yeas, 28 nays.
So Amendment Number 2 has failed to pass the House. That brings us back to the vote, or the reconsideration of SB 242 as amended. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of SB 242, amended House, under reconsideration. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
29 yeas, 8 nays.
And so SB 242 has passed the House under reconsideration. Any other items of unfinished business? Representative Halcrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, under Mason's Rule 491 at this time, I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 282 to the floor for consideration of the full body.
There is objection. Representative Halcrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And respecting that Mason's gives the maker of such a motion such a narrow scope to work in, I will define for the members on the body, without getting into the merits of the legislation, why I feel that this extreme measure is necessary at this time. Mr. Speaker, on Friday in the Labor and Commerce Committee, I had the opportunity to chair the committee meeting. The chair was out of town on state business. There was another member absent, and there was five members, satisfying the need for a quorum to do business. We held three bills in committee, we heard three bills in committee. We moved the first one, second one we set aside. The third one was before the committee. Called the bill before the committee. There was committee testimony. There was sponsor testimony. There was witness testimony, and we closed public testimony. The committee then went to work. We adopted three amendments. The first two were technical in nature. The third one was introduced by the chairman, myself, because I felt this amendment was not only germane in the scope and title of the bill, it was germane to the title in which the original piece of legislation identified, and it matched perfectly with the sponsor statement. So I forwarded the amendment. It was a very important amendment. Without, once again, Mr. Speaker, getting into the merits of the issue, I will tell you that it was the most important health issue that the women in the state of Alaska face today. So I forwarded the amendment, and there was some very colorful and honest committee testimony. I will tell you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm not saying this for self-grandeur, but I will tell you, I know copies of that committee is on tape from gavel to gavel, and I would suggest every member of this body get that committee testimony and watch the last 30 minutes. I will tell you, it is what this process is about. It was open, honest discussion on its merits. The process was flawless. We made amendment to the amendment. It was adopted and moved by the committee on a vote of 3-2. The main bill was before the committee. One of the members made a motion to move that bill from committee. The vote was taken. It passed 3-2. Two members that dissented got up and left the committee room without signing the bill packet and refused to sign the bill packet. Now, bear in mind, Mr. Speaker, there was no formidable argument as to really the amendment. As I said, completely germane. But two members left the committee room, refused to sign the bill packet. Thereby, the bill is technically still in the Labor and Commerce Committee because we cannot transmit it to the House Secretary without four committee members signing the bill packet. So even though five committee members were there, participated from start to finish, to gavel out, and took a vote on the record, we have basically a stoppage in what is a democratic process. So I think this is a very extreme measure, but I think circumstances, you know, they warrant it, Mr. Speaker. And I would ask the members this. I would ask the members to please give me the benefit of the doubt on this one. I think the facts are very clear. I think this issue is incredibly, incredibly important that we discuss it. And I would ask that you support my motion to pull this bill from committee to the floor to have a discussion. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Majority Leader.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Listening to the series of comments that were made by the previous speaker, if this committee needs four people to pass a bill out of committee, and if that is the case, then that is the rules.
Representative Velcro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the latitude to answer the Majority Leader's question. The rules in checking with legislative legal are you need a majority of the quorum to pass a bill from committee, not a majority of the committee.
Representative Halgrove, that is incorrect. You need a majority of the committee to pass a bill from committee. You need a majority of the quorum to pass an amendment. Representative Scott.
I think, Mr. Speaker, I wanted to rise on that point because I did check with Ledge Legal after the committee hearing on Friday, and it was Ms. Cook's interpretation that you do need a majority of the committee. So if membership is 7, you need 4 to move a bill out of committee. Now, she also indicated that this particular issue has never been tested in the courts, but it certainly was her interpretation that you need 4 members to move a bill out of committee. Mr. Speaker, just on the issue, you know, I was one of those in the committee that left understanding that the bill shouldn't move because it wasn't four votes. And the only other alternative was not to sign the committee report. Mr. Speaker, by discharging this bill out of committee to this floor for open debate, I don't think you're going to get any closer than what we did in Labor and Commerce because the issue is so extensive, you're going to have some experts. And there were questions that I had on that particular issue that were never brought up. We didn't have the people, the experts there that would give us the testimony. And that was my only concern. I mean, there was verbiage thrown around, acronyms that I'd never heard of, and I needed clarification. I wouldn't be able to get that clarification if this bill was on the floor today for open debate. So, Mr. Speaker, I oppose the discharge.
Representative Mulder.
Rise in opposition from the discharge motion. Mr. Speaker, we all may have frustrations with processes, but processes in the democratic process, by and large, are established to protect the minority interest. And in this particular case, for example, the House Finance Committee, we have 11 members. No bill can move from the Finance Committee without six affirmative votes to move that bill. That way it protects the minority interest, and it doesn't allow a simple small number of folks who happen to be there at a convenient place, time, or moment to move something when members may be opposing it. So, Mr. Speaker, you may not always like process, but process protects the democratic process itself, all members, majority and minority.
Representative Mulder. Representative Croft, then Dice.
It's kind of a tricky point that I've spent a fair amount of time with Tam Cook on. I guess, Mr. Speaker, I'd argue that it's germane to the motion we have before us. What Mason says is you cannot talk about the bill, the merits of the bill itself. You talk about the merits of the motion. The motion here is to discharge. And the question is, was it proper or improper to not sign the sheet? And I'd like to talk on that. So what is the motion to discharge appropriate because of this conduct? And that goes sort of to the merits of, do you need four or three? Allow me that latitude on the question of four or three.
Briefly.
Again, not on the merits of the bill, just on the question of whether you actually need four or three in a seven-member committee. If I could read just two sentences from Rule 24 in our uniform rules. It says, committee reports must be in writing and the report must be signed by a majority of the members of the committee. The report will note the recommendation of each member signing the report. And I think our conduct here is a mixture of practice and the rules technically themselves. The rules technically only require the signing by a majority of the members of the committee. They can sign it and say, do not pass. And if there are four members that do that, then it moves from committee. And that's the crux of the argument we have here. We've sort of more generally interpreted that to mean you need four votes to move it, because if you vote to move it, clearly you don't have any objection to signing it. But technically, the signing of the report is the operative action for the rules. And so on the comments of the last three speakers, including yourself, Mr. Speaker, that's the technical problem we have here. It doesn't refer to a vote to advance in the rules, though we do that. It refers to signing the document, and when three won't, you're really at a rules impasse.
Well, for the purposes of this discussion, with the permission of the body, the number of votes required to discharge a bill by committee vote is not the issue. The motion before this body is to pull the bill from committee for a discussion on the House, regardless of the vote out of committee. The fact that for the 10 years that I've been here, it has been a requirement that to move a bill from committee, you must have a majority of the committee has been long established and I think is precedent on the matter, notwithstanding the fact that it is irrelevant to this particular motion. So the motion before the body again is to bring HB 282 to the floor from committee. And we'll continue the discussion, if any, on that. Representative Dyson, and then Capio.
Well said, Mr. Speaker, and thank you. To the motion itself, this is an interesting discussion, but as I understand it, the amendment to the bill that we're discussing removing actually would, in fact, be pulling a bill out of my committee that is there, and so I object also on that grounds, that the amendment pulls another bill from committee. Thank you.
Representative Dyson, Representative Coghill.
Well, I'm going to object to the motion because that's my bill. And it changed my bill substantially. And I would certainly like the opportunity to at least argue against what happened in committee on Friday. So bringing it to the floor once again, would kind of hamper me in that I have not studied that issue to the degree that might require a debate on this floor. And there is not only one other bill of that same substance that was amended into my bill, but there is one other also on the other side.
Representative Goggin, Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I too, was at the Labor and Commerce Committee meeting, and this truly was or started out to be a simple bill. It was actually only about a page long, and then the amendment that the representative from Sand Lake made was 2 pages long. So it was obviously a major change to the bill. The sponsor had no idea, did not know it was coming. It's obviously something he feels very strongly about, and he did not support. But, Mr. Speaker, I would agree that I think before we took this up, that I wish the other members of the body would watch the 30 minutes of that meeting before they make their decision, so that they can see what happened and the amendment that was being made and the discussion that we had, and they can see how major of an amendment it really was. It is my understanding, though, Mr. Speaker, now that we have a full body back in Labor and Commerce, if the chairperson wants to take this back up today, she certainly could. We have plenty. We have 2 more members, so it probably would either pass or fail the committee today. Thank you.
Representative Meyer, Representative Hudson, and then Murkowski. Brevities.
Back to order.
Representative James.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to remind the body this is a procedural motion, and I would recommend people vote no.
Thank you, Representative James. Representative Halcrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I wish to withdraw my motion.
Motion has been withdrawn. Do we have any other items of unfinished business? Yes, we do. I would like to unfortunately declare that HCR 23, Legislative Committee's split House Hess has received a fiscal note and will thereby be referred to the Finance Committee. Any other items of unfinished business, Madam Majority Leader?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from a call of the House for the following times. Amend Representative Bundy's previously excused absence from 7 a.m. Saturday, April 20, to 5 p.m. flight time Monday, April 22. Withdraw Representative Bundy's previously excused absence from 6:56 p.m. Friday, April 26, to 10:04 a.m. Monday, April 29. Representative Hayes from 7:09 a.m. Saturday, April 20, to 10 a.m. flight time Monday, April 22. And Representative James from 11:45 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. Thursday, April 18.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused on the dates and times indicated by the Majority Leader. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I have a brief of these?
Brief of these. Any other items of unfinished business? Committee announcements. Representative Masick, and then Cobb.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resource Committee was going to meet at 1, but I understand we may have to delay that until maybe about 1:30 today.
No, actually, that will be available.
Great. Okay. 1 o'clock. Well, we may start 1:15 to give members time to have grab a bite to eat. 1:15.
Resources at 1:15.
Thank you.
Any other committee announcements? Representative Cotton and Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Rules Committee will resume its hearings on, I think we have 2 matters left yet on the docket, but it will not be today due to time constraints and trying to get everybody to get there to have a quorum. So we'll work on time, and I'll get with the individual members.
Representative Cott. Representative Stevens.
Mr. Speaker, the Special Committee on Fisheries will be meeting tonight at 3:30, dealing with House Bill 456, a little controversial, and has to do with the fishermen's loans from Division of Investments and CFAP. We will be only meeting until 5:30 because of the memorial service for Tom Madsen. It'll be, just to remind you members, it'll be at Ward Air tonight. As you may know, Tommy grew up in Kodiak, a relative of my family's, and his wife, Stephanie, many of you know very well. So that'll be this evening at Ward Air at 5:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stevens. Representative
Coghill, and then Meyer, and then Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The State Affairs, if you'll notice in the published announcements, only shows the Tuesday meeting. So, and that was an oversight on my part. I actually signed the wrong note, which exempted the Thursday meeting. So what I intend to do, Mr. Speaker, is go ahead and have the Tuesday meeting. If we can hear all those bills, then we will not have a Thursday meeting. But if we can't hear all those bills, my intention is to recess the meeting to Thursday. So just for a heads up on that.
Representative Coghill. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Community Regional Affairs, we will be meeting tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Please be on time. We have two bills and a little incentive. If we get through these two bills, then we may not have to meet on Thursday. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Wilson.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Senator Stevens.
Mr. Speaker, my trusty sidekick as the co-chair of Fisheries has corrected my my misstatement. I wanted to say that Fisheries will meet from 3:30 until 5. We will adjourn at 5, and then the memorial service is at 5:30.
Representative Stevens. Any other committee announcements? Representative Williams.
Yes, Finance is going to meet at 1:30 today to take up House Bill 352, 509, 515. And SCR 28. And deadline for reappropriation is today, April 15th, and the deadline for capital request is Wednesday the 17th.
Any other committee announcements? Any general announcements? With the permission of the body, I have one. We have delayed a majority caucus on a very important item about five times now because of various things that have come up. There will be a majority caucus tomorrow immediately following a session, regardless. Thank you. Representative Hudson.
Mr. Speaker, since everyone here is quite familiar with Stephanie Madsen and Tom Madsen, I wonder if it would be appropriate for me to ask that all members be shown as sponsors on this memorial.
Without objection, all members will be shown as sponsors of the memorial citation. Any other announcements? Special orders? Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move that the body go and look at the special citation that's on their desk.
We have, without objection, the special citation before us. Madam Majority Leader.
Then I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation be approved and that all members be shown as sponsors.
Without objection, that citation is approved and all members will be shown as sponsors. Any other special orders? Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to speak on time on my hands.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, it's an unfortunate day today for two reasons. Number one, my taxes are due, and I don't have the money to pay Uncle Sam, so I was going to go to my good friend that chairs the Finance Committee and see if I could get a loan. They told me they were behind me, way behind me. But, Mr. Speaker, also for another reason, which is a little more serious, I've come into contact with a hard copy of an email that was sent out. It's about three pages. And specifically, it references the members from District 23 and 4, 13 and 15, and 21 and 22. Mr. Speaker, this email is an email that addresses the alcohol tax. And whether you're for or against the tax, you know, that's not the relevant issue here. It is a detailed description of the tax and why it's a fair tax and why it's important. But the reason why I'm bringing this up at this point, Mr. Speaker, is because this email came out of a state employee's office in the Department of Revenue. And not only did it come out of that office, but the number, the telephone number is there. If you need to know who your legislator is, call me and I'll tell you so you can lobby your individual legislator to have the alcohol tax brought up for a vote. Mr. Speaker, I think that it's unfortunate that one individual taints the rest of the state employees, because I know they do an extremely good job, and I've always been supportive of them. Mr. Speaker, I think this is inappropriate behavior. I don't think you'll find it in the code of conduct of state employees.
It's certainly not beneficial when you look at it from a broad perspective. If you're behind the state employees, it really gives them a bad name. Mr. Speaker, it is clearly, in my mind, inappropriate of governmental resources in utilizing the computers to send this email out. I just would hope that this is an isolated incident, and we will do a little more investigation on this. But I just wanted to bring that to the body's attention in case others have received the same hard copy email. Thank you.
Representative Cobb, any other special orders? Madam Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 16th.
See you tomorrow.